from KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Graybar Sports Open Line.
Those big swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Graybar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauley on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go.
We welcome you into a brand new week. Welcome in. It's Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauley. We have a full two-hour program tonight, taking you until 8 o'clock this evening. And then you get another hour of me with another a few other folks coming up at 8 o'clock, as well as a KMOX Sports Roundtable this evening, where Tom Ackerman, Bernie Miklas, Kevin Wheeler, and myself talk through college football and the World Series and some other things as well, hockey, the Blues. So that's going to be coming up. So really, we have you covered until 9 o'clock with Sports Talk right here on KMOX. As always, if you want to join in on the program, multiple ways to get connected. You can call, you can text, same number, whether you're calling or texting, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauley on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. If you ever want to see the video version of this show, which is literally just me standing in front of a microphone talking, but if that's the thing that you want to see, you can see that via social media. You can also leave voice messages via the Odyssey app. Here's what's coming up on the program today. Danny Wexelman, one of our favorite people to talk baseball with, a St. Louisan who, of course, has made it big with ESPN and MLB Network Radio. From Yankee Stadium, she joins us in about 10 minutes or so. And then Patrick Dorcher will join us at 6:35, covers the NFL for NBC Sports. We'll look back at the weekend that was. We'll look at the Kansas City Chiefs. Well, look, we're going to spend some time today. I wish I should have invited Chris Ronge onto the program, because for those of you who don't know, Ronge, he loves his Chicago Bears, and what a terrible way for the Bears to lose on a Hail Mary from the Washington Commanders, where one of the Bears players was already celebrating and celebrating to the crowd with his back to the play as the Hail Mary was successfully executed. That was as Bears as it gets. So we're going to have some fun with that coming up later on in the program as well. From a hockey standpoint, Blues get back at it tomorrow. They continue their four-game road trip, where their first three games are being played in Canada. They have a win against Toronto, a loss against Montreal. They'll play the Senators tomorrow, and then they are going to wrap up this road trip when they take on the Philadelphia Flyers coming up on Thursday, and then they are finally going to get back home. Their next home game, it is scheduled for this Saturday, when Craig Berube and the Toronto Maple Leafs are going to be in St. Louis, and we'll see if the Blues can do what they did to Toronto this past Thursday when they won by a 5-1 score. This is the first time we have been able to talk since the World Series got underway. Dodgers take the first two games of the series, both in Los Angeles, and the series is now going to shift to New York for the next three. If, and it's a big if, because I still think the door is open for the Yankees to walk through. I still think the Yankees have a legitimate chance to win this World Series. But that being said, if they don't, and if they lose tonight, that's probably all she wrote, because then they're down 3-0. And with all due respect to the Yankees, I don't think they're winning four straight against the Dodgers. But if the Yankees win tonight, that sets them up to possibly win tomorrow in a bullpen game that the Dodgers are going to throw. And then all of a sudden, it's not crazy to think that it's going to be a 2-2 series. In fact, the Yankees are favored in tonight's game. I would assume they're going to be favored tomorrow. So the prognosticators would tell you that this series is likely to be 2-2 before eventually getting back to the respective tops of the rotation again. But just crazy that the Dodgers have to go with a bullpen game. This is the Dodgers with this huge payroll. And now, admittedly, they had lots of injuries this year, and many of those injuries impacted the starting rotation. But it's a World Series game. You have a ridiculous payroll, and you're stuck with a bullpen game in game number four. Just crazy that it's turned out that way. So we'll see what happens tonight. For me, the story of this postseason, not just this World Series, not just these two teams, for me, the story of this postseason has been the moments. And maybe I'm being a prisoner of said moment. because I do that sometimes. I think we all do. But I feel like the big moments in this year's postseason, there have been so many more of them. Just memorable plays that have happened. And we had another one of those on Friday night in Game 1 of the World Series, where if the Dodgers win this World Series, and more importantly, if the Yankees lose this World Series, I think the Yankees are going to be kicking themselves from Game 1 because they had the lead going to the bottom of the 10th inning. They even got Shohei Ohtani to pop out to get the second out, and up walks Freddie Freeman with one ankle, and the first pitch that he sees, admittedly, being thrown by a guy who hadn't pitched in a month, and Nestor Cortes. Freddie Freeman immediately deposits that thing into the outfield for a grand slam. And what an incredible moment that was. In many ways, I shifted. I was kind of rooting for the Yankees in the series. I don't really have a hard rooting interest in this series, but I kind of went from being pro Yankees to pro Dodgers just because that moment was amazing. That moment was amazing. And I want it to matter. And if the Yankees win this World Series, that grand slam from Freddie Freeman becomes a footnote. Yeah, there was this pretty cool grand slam that happened in the first game of the series. Dodgers went up 2-0 and the Yankees eventually came back and won it. But if the Dodgers win this, we're going to think back on the Freddie Freeman grand slam, not exactly the way we look at the Kirk Gibson home run, but somewhat similar. So because just from a standpoint of loving baseball and loving this year's postseason and loving all these big moments and wanting them to be, from a historical standpoint, as impactful as possible, in many ways, I am rooting for the Dodgers now to win this series just because of that Freddie Freeman grand slam. Now, if a Yankee does something even cooler, then maybe I'm going to switch it to the other side. We'll wait and see. All right, when we come back, we are going to be joined by our friend Danny Wexelman, covers Major League Baseball for ESPN and MLB Network Radio. She joins us in just a moment. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauly on KMOX.
We do roll on here on a Monday night. Welcome back in. Tonight it is game 3 of the World Series. Dodgers lead the Yankees 2-0, but the series is now shifting to New York, and that's what we're going to do. We're going to shift to New York and welcome on one of our absolute favorite people, period, and favorite people to talk baseball with. She is a St. Louisan, and she rules the world now on MLB Network Radio and ESPN. She is Danny Wexelman. Danny, it's always great to talk with you. How are you?
Oh, my God, Matt. I'm stoked to be here. I am right now. I'm on the concourse right now. Got here early for the game, pregame on the field. And it's the best time of the year, so I so appreciate you having me.
Yeah, we're glad that you found some time for us. Set the scene. How are Yankees fans feeling right now with this team down 2-0, but the series shifting to New York?
I think they're nervous, if I'm being honest. I think that there's this air of, what if it doesn't get back to L.A.? What if we can't win a game at home? And I think you kind of saw that in the ticket prices. If anyone was paying attention to those, they started to go down, which is really interesting, right? Because they haven't had a World Series home game in 15 years. But I will tell you that the crowds have poured in early. They're loud. They're excited. Everyone's got their best Yankees gear on. I've seen way more Yankee fans than Dodger fans, as it should be. The tickets are really hard to come by. But I do think there's a little bit of nervousness, I would say, because the Dodgers have taken that commanding 2-0 lead.
I've seen the social media clips and some of the comments from columnists and so forth out of New York about Aaron Boone's bullpen strategy, especially in game 1. Is he able to tune that out? Obviously, you manage in New York, you're able to do that, but obviously a lot of people were not happy with Nestor Cortes being in that spot in game 1.
I think that if you asked Aaron Boone if he could have a mulligan, I would bet he would probably take it, right? And not even go to a different bullpen arm, but keep Luke Hoover in that ball game, he could have done it, right? He's got to go up in game one. And so I do think that he can manage it. I have no doubt in my mind. I've had a chance to get to know him a little bit and also cover him in the game. And I think that he is a really good manager and he makes mistakes. And I do think that he recognizes that probably wasn't the right move, but you know, this is the World Series, and sometimes you get outmanaged, and sometimes you make decisions that in the moment feel really good, and obviously in hindsight, that did not feel so good. But Aaron Boone is a consummate professional. This is a guy who's not listening to what anyone's saying or paying attention to anything that anybody is saying. He's very focused on his team and moving forward. And so I have the utmost confidence in him. I mean, listen, you have two of the best managers in the game. He and Dave Roberts have been exceptional. Dave has done a better job all throughout this postseason. He has earned his paycheck and then some this season, the injuries that they've sustained. But I have faith in Aaron Boone. I know a lot of people maybe don't always see it that way, but I think if you look at it from an objective perspective, what he's done all season long, game one with Sandy, like without that, I'd say he's done a hell of a job, but he needs to step up. The whole team has to step up. They are, to me, swimming upstream right now, trying to just win their first ball game. It feels insurmountable, but I like the rest of the moves that Boone has made.
Shohei Ohtani in the lineup, leading off. He's the DH for the Dodgers. Has any indication been given just how compromised that shoulder might be or what percent he's at, or are the Dodgers very much keeping that close to the vest?
Yeah, I actually talked to a source before the game. They were here working and just looking at the shoulder length at the ballpark. So I don't know the extent of what he's feeling or really what that partial dislocation things, but guys, it's the World Series, you know. So I think ultimately he must feel good enough, and they feel good enough, right? Because he's a $700 million man, good enough for him to be in this game. It's good news he doesn't play the field or pitch, right? So he just got to swing that back. It's the left shoulder, so it's that back shoulder, which obviously is important. I would expect him to be maybe more cautious on the bases, not stealing unless he absolutely has to, or obviously sliding unless the play calls for it. But I think that if he's in the lineup, then he's good to go. I ultimately don't think that you would see him in there if there was any concern about it getting worse, or that if that would be compromising to him in the future. So I feel like the indication for me that he's in the lineup means that it really isn't as bad as maybe it looked or it seemed in the moment.
We're talking with Danny Wexelman from ESPN and MLB Network Radio. Going back to the bullpen usage for just a moment, do you think managers are looking around? Because it feels like to me in the playoffs, because of all the off days, we're seeing liberal usage of the bullpen because you're able to bring guys back more often, and maybe the effectiveness is not what you want it to be. Do you think one of these next steps in baseball is maybe reevaluating how you use pitching in the postseason, almost ignoring the fact that there's so many off days?
Oh, gosh, it's so tough, right? Because I think in this moment, you're doing the best with what you have. And unfortunately for the Dodgers, the bullpen game is necessary. It's ugly. Nobody wants it. Dave Roberts doesn't want it. The Dodgers don't want it. But they are doing the best with what they have. The problem is that, right, as you said, the starters can't go deep into games. You're taxing your bullpen. And so what does that mean? Well, that also means for the opposing team that they're seeing those arms a lot more. That's good news for them. Bad news for that staff that has to pitch over and over and over again because your starters can't figure it out. And listen, Jack Flaherty's done it, right? Former Cardinal, of course he has. Garrett Cole did it in game one. He was able to give them length. But other than that, I think you have to kind of succumb to the idea that you're at the end of the season. Everyone is tired. Your starters aren't going to be able to give you length. That's why you have eight bullpen arms to bridge that gap. For example, right, Jake Cousins for the Yankees, Brent Honeywell Jr. for the Dodgers. Those are those guys who maybe can give you both innings like a starter and get you through whether you're up big or down big. But I don't know the solution. I hate it, Matt. I love old school baseball. I want to see these guys go seven. And it's unfortunate because we start to call it vintage, right? You're like, oh, it's a vintage performance. I'm like, that should just be the regular. That should be the norm. If you're going seven innings, right, that's what baseball deserves. But it is a problem, and I don't like it. And I don't think fans like it either. No one wants to see a bullpen guy come in the fourth inning. That's not good baseball. That's not good for the game. But unfortunately, especially in this postseason, that's been the key. And you're also, I'll add too, like, you see the high leverage guys, right? Your closers or your setup man coming in the fifth or sixth because that's the biggest moment. And it's kind of exciting. But then also you start to wonder who's going to close this game out if it's a close game. And I think that taxes the managers and the decisions they make as well. But I don't have the solution, but I will say I don't love seeing it. But You got to get through the postseason, and sometimes it just is. It's just jerry-rigged, right? It's next man up, spikes on, and you figure it out.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. On the other side of it, and this has a lot to do with the Stars, that's not impacting TV ratings. They're up like 60% year over year. They're up 90% for the younger demographic. If you're baseball, you look and you see it's a series that features Shohei Ohtani and Mookie Betts and Aaron Judge and Juan Soto, and you say the Stars are bringing out the TV ratings, but it's good for the health of the game when that many people are watching it.
Oh my gosh. It makes my heart so happy, Matt, to see those numbers go up. And it is because the Stars are playing, but also we've been spoiled in October. These have been some of the best postseason games I've ever seen watching this game. And that's not just me saying that, right? That is the generation above me and the generation above them saying that as well, because the talent is off the charts. And you have this expanded postseason now with 12 teams, and the Tigers get in and they're fun, and they ruined the Astros season, right? There's all these great narratives and storylines. And I think it's two reasons. Number one, the league is doing a better job of marketing everybody and marketing the storylines and making everyone accessible. That wasn't the case a decade ago. You could tell a story about every guy, maybe not about the Stars and maybe not about a guy like, I don't know, Tommy Edman, who has had a breakout October, right? And so everyone is accessible now. Everyone wants their story out there. And you also have the two presumptive MVPs, two guys that hit more than 50 home runs in the season going head-to-head. You have both coasts. This is, you could really look back and say, the last time we had a World Series in Spade was 1981 when these two teams played each other. And so I think that there's so many great things about what we're seeing, and people are loving the guys. It's all about the people on the field who now feel like your friend, right? Jazz Chisholm Jr., for example, very accessible, right? And everything that he does with his socials. I think that I know I'm kind of speaking to maybe a millennial generation or Gen Z, but I think that's why people have fallen back in love with the game and they've been watching, is because there's drama, there's moments, and you feel like you know who these guys are.
100%. And baseball at times struggles with showing out on the Stars, but we know who these people are, and everybody does, and it's certainly shown in the TV ratings. Dani Wexelman does an incredible job working with ESPN, MLB Network Radio. Follow her on Twitter at Dani Wex, DaniWex. Dani, thanks for the time. I know it's a busy night for you. Really cool that you were able to spend a few moments with us.
Oh, it is my pleasure. I'm the lucky one, Matt, and thanks for having me. Enjoy the game.
Awesome. Very good. That's Dani Wexelman joining us here on the program. A native St. Louisan, and she's part of the team at ESPN and MLB Network Radio covering Major League Baseball, doing a fantastic job with it, and we're happy that we're able to get a few moments with her. All right, we are going to switch gears. We're going to talk some football coming up in just a moment or so. Look back at the weekend that was in the NFL. This is a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Great to have you guys with us today. It was an entertaining weekend of NFL football. Always an entertaining weekend of NFL football. The Chiefs, they win again. They just keep winning. They are now 7-0. Some other interesting things happening as well. To look back at the weekend that was, very happy to welcome in somebody who covers and writes about the NFL for NBC Sports. He is Patrick Daugherty. He is on Twitter at RotoPat, R-O-T-O-P-A-T. Patrick, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Thanks for having me, and I'm really thankful you had me for the NFL segment and not the disappointing Mizzou segment. I am an anguished alum, and I knew the most dangerous thing in the world this year was having actual expectations for my Tigers.
Yeah, well, they're still in the top 25 somehow, some way, but that it's a bad look when you go into the season with college football playoff expectations and the losses are very one-sided the way they've come in the Texas A&M and the Alabama game.
They are, but, being a true Mizzou fan, I blame the refs for A&M, and I blame injuries for Alabama, and I can sleep easy at night then.
Okay. You know what? Whatever gets you through the night is that's good, and I don't want to mess with that. I don't want to add to your personal anguish. Let's talk a little bit about the Chiefs, because it's just remarkable on an every-week basis They're finding ways to win. Sometimes you look at the box score and you go, well, how did they win that game? And they end up doing it. Sometimes they have problems with the Raiders. They're able to go into Las Vegas and win again. It just, this is the team right now in the NFL that it feels like almost nothing matters. They're just going to win.
It's true. I joked online a few weeks ago that it kind of seems like the worse the Chiefs become, the more like unstoppable they are. And yeah. Just from a sense that like, it doesn't matter how many problems pop up. It's almost like a whack-a-mole situation. It's a situation where they're actually whacking the mole. And, you know, it's crazy. I'm in the fantasy football space. And fantasy players, you know, they cannot believe that, like, Patrick Mahomes is no longer, you know, like, a weekly 320 yards, three touchdowns. And, like, that kind of is, like, tinting, like, the perception of the Chiefs in the fantasy space. But the way this Chiefs team has changed, where, you know, that was the baseline for these championships and for like this new dynasty for so long, and how it just kind of shifted almost not overnight, but kind of imperceptibly to being like defense first. And as they're trying to figure out things on offense, you know, trying to work in new guys all the time. You know, some of them are new old friends like Kareem Hunt, Mecole Hardman. They're in this situation where they have to be experimenting on offense, and they can get away with it because of how good the defense is, and because, you know, how, like, Brady-like Mahomes is, where even if he can't, like, post the box scores that made him famous right now, he's never going to really make the big mistake. He's always going to make the right decision. And whereas before they were, like, an explosive offensive team, you know, they're just, like, a fundamentals and little things team right now. And it's frustrating my fantasy football compatriots, but, you know, they look like they are the clear Super Bowl favorite to me. And right now, I would say cruising to a third straight Super Bowl title.
Is it a positive development, two things, that Travis Kelce had a pretty good performance, a bunch of receptions, 90 yards, so it wasn't long. You know, his long was 25 yards in the game, but he actually caught a bunch of passes, which is something he really hasn't done this year. And then the numbers this week don't really matter, but they're going to continue to integrate DeAndre Hopkins more and more and more, and you got to think that he's got the opportunity to become more impactful as the season goes along. When you look at those two things, should that give Chiefs fans the belief that the offense and that receiving group could be a little bit better than it is right now?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's kind of happened since the Rashee Rice injury is, you know, the Chiefs in some ways have kind of become like, I always compare them to like the Golden State Warriors at their peak, where it's like the regular season, it's important. You can't punt on the regular season. You know, a team that's always just thinking ahead to the playoffs, like understandably so. And I think the plan coming into the season is kind of, you know, not that they were going to like snap count Travis Kelce, but, you know, just not make Travis have to get 10 or 12 targets a game, have him catching 8 to 9 passes a game, just try to keep him a little fresher with the postseason in mind. It's kind of what they did last year. And so again, in the fantasy space, that was really frustrating people because he was catching 2 or 3 passes of a game to begin the year. But I think they had one eye on the postseason. But then when Rashee Rice went out, Rashee Rice had taken like kind of a lot of like that short area work, that work over the middle of the field, is Travis Kelce's bread and butter. And after Rashee Rice got hurt, it was kind of like they flipped the switch. And Travis Kelce is not quite like still like prime era Travis Kelce, but we're seeing box scores, stat lines like way more similar to his prime. And I think that is kind of what was proven there, that he could have probably been doing this from the beginning of the season. They wanted to try to save him for the postseason. They don't have that luxury right now. And I think Travis Kelce can keep this up. Even if DeAndre Hopkins, who didn't even really run that many routes this week, obviously his usage will ramp up. Maybe he'll take some of the load off Travis Kelce, but I definitely think that the recent improved box scores from Travis Kelce are going to remain a theme going forward.
You've got your Sunday Aftermath column, which is available at NBCSports.com, and you go through a few things. First off, the Browns beat the Ravens, which was completely unexpected. Jameis Winston at quarterback, he played well. I always kind of pump the brakes when these backup quarterbacks come in and have a good first game, because we should learn from Andy Dalton and Joe Flacco and whatever other backup quarterback in the last 5 years who've come in and played well in their first game, and then everything's kind of regressed to the mean afterwards. But is it more about Jameis Winston, or is it more of an indictment on Deshaun Watson that the Browns were able to do what they did against Baltimore?
Well, kind of all of the above, and also, honestly, an indictment of the Ravens, where it's flying a little bit beneath the radar to like more casual football fans, that the Ravens' defense just has not lived up to reputation this year. They're actually allowing the most passing yards in the NFL, they're not having a ton of fantasy football points to quarterbacks. Where they just are having a really hard time getting things sorted on defense. But, I mean, the statistical comparisons between what Jameis did and what Deshaun Watson was doing, I mean, is not even close. I mean, this is after, too, they traded Amari Cooper 330 yards yesterday. Deshaun Watson had never even been over 200 all year. He threw three touchdowns. Deshaun Watson had five all year. You know, those are just like the raw, like a statistical, like stats, like the more advanced stats. He blew them out of the way, like efficiency metrics, and he had some luck. He had some dropped interceptions, but the quarterback or attempts are kind of a quarterback stat. It just seemed like Deshaun Watson just could not handle like a high volume passing attack anymore, amongst many things he could not handle. And Jameis has always been a guy kind of like Joe Flacco, kind of like a Kirk Cousins, where it doesn't really matter what your style might have been before you play Jameis Winston. He's going to throw the ball a lot. Some weeks it's going to horribly backfire. But whereas before, I mean, the Browns had to, were scratching and clawing for like any production, moving the ball at all. Jameis, you're going to get the interceptions, but he actually goes down the field. He's just going to actually play quarterback. And they're going to have some they're going to have games where the other team doesn't drop three interceptions. The Ravens dropped three interceptions the other day. But whereas it was kind of like abandoned hope, like all you enter here with Deshaun Watson, the Browns are now going to be at least be in every game they play with their defense and Jameis, you know, just actually running like an actual offense.
The thing that I'm kind of stuck on when it comes to the Browns, and I know Kevin Stefanski handed over play calling duties, but it's still his offense. He's a really good coach and a really good offensive play caller and a good offensive scheme designer, and they just look terrible, and then all of a sudden they look good with Jameis Winston, and I just keep going back to how much Deshaun Watson seemingly took them down.
The Deshaun Watson situation is just one of the craziest in recent NFL history for a lot of reasons, and I think two things happened with Deshaun. You know, the year he was away, things have been changing very quickly in the NFL over the past 5 or 6 years. You know, they're always changing, but we had like the peak, you know, that all-time passing era, the Breeze, Brady, Manning era, where passing offense, explosive offenses just took the day. And I think people kind of took it for granted that that era would just always continue. That was like the NFL as it was now. But I think what we've kind of learned is that actually it was just kind of a special collection of talent. But then defenses finally adjusted. I think Deshaun Watson just missed probably a really pivotal year. Like the year to year, the defenses have just been getting like exponentially more complex. I think that happened to Deshaun Watson. And, you know, he banged his shoulder several times. And to me, he looked like a guy this year kind of trying to like shot put the ball, like the dreaded, like he could, when he did get it down the field, he was just having to heave it, having to put too much into it. And I think he lost more than probably anyone expected in that year away from the field. And then physically, I just think he lost a lot more than expected, the shoulder injuries and just kind of a perfect storm of things not going right for Deshaun Watson and that Browns offense.
Last thing for you, and it was probably the biggest story out of the weekend, but just another loss for the Jets. This team is terrible. They're dysfunctional. They've fired a coach. They've got an offensive coordinator who doesn't seem like he has any clue, an interim head coach who just is in over his head. I mean, this could not be any more of a disaster than it is right now for the Jets.
No, it could not be. And they're out of scapegoats too. Like they fired two people, you know, they traded four people. They've already like pulled all the fire alarms basically. And the Jets, if you were being generous, there were some excuses for maybe the slow start. You never expected them to start 2-5, but it was a really, really tough schedule to begin the year, and especially a tough schedule of just really good defenses. But the Patriots yesterday were supposed to be the beginning of the turnaround, of the let-up. And then to lose that game, they were just all the same. Nothing was fixed. Like, this, it's a Hall of Fame quarterback, like an inner-ring Hall of Fame quarterback, and the offensive operation is just so sloppy. They burned all three of their timeouts really early in the first half. They burned two early in the second half. You know, you have a guy who's up alongside Tom Brady and Peyton Manning, and they're getting pre-snap penalties almost every series. The operation is just terrible. It moves slowly. So, like, they don't – when they're falling behind, they're having trouble keeping up because it's not an up-tempo offense. And just even now, if they finish the year strong, say they go 7-2, they're still at 9-8. They're probably on the outside looking in of the playoffs. And you know, sometimes I get accused of being hyperbolic, but yesterday just kind of felt like the end of the Aaron Rodgers era, yeah. Unfortunately, where I just don't know how this team can come back from 2-6.
I agree. And look, I lived in Wisconsin for a long time while he was a Packer, and he offended a lot of people in the way he went about things, but he always followed it up with victories. Now he's the same guy, but he's losing, and it just feels like the world is rooting against him. And I have to wonder, 10 years from now, 15 years from now, is this going to be something that impacts his legacy, or are we just going to think back on the Green Bay years? Because there are so many people that are really taking joy in Aaron Rodgers not having much success.
I will say that, you know, these bitter ends tend to fade. So I guess he has that working in his favor. And so you're going to see, just a guy who's not to go psychoanalyst here, but not playing with a lot of joy.
No.
Sound dumb. I don't think I've seen Aaron Rodgers smile this season, and it kind of understandably so. But I don't think it's a legacy tarnisher necessarily. It depends on what he keeps doing off the field, of course. But, I mean, I think kind of like Favre with the Packer, it's almost like a rite of passage for a lot of these guys. You go finish your career, usually it's dismal. I don't think this is going to affect his legacy for what he did with the Packers. I don't know. He's the kind of guy, he could go do something totally crazy. He could have a disappointing season, then go do something totally crazy. So I guess the ball is in his court on that one.
Patrick, if people want to read your stuff, they can do so at NBCSports.com. Just give a plug on how to find it. And like you said, you're a lot in the fantasy space, so people who play fantasy football definitely be interested in the content that you're putting out.
Yeah, RotoPat, R-O-T-O-Pat on Twitter. NBCSports, RotoWorld.com in particular. I podcast several times a week, the RotoWorld Football Show. So yeah, check it out, especially if you want to read about fantasy football.
Are you based in St. Louis?
I am. So that's what I can never say no to. America's Sports Voice came away.
Oh, baby.
It's special to come on. So, yeah, I am a St. Louisan. It's tough during the season to fit things in. I would never say no to KMOX. A lifelong listener. Truly a privilege to come on.
Awesome. Well, we'll get you on again. I really enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for the time.
Thank you so much, Matt.
All right, very good. That's Patrick Dorge joining us here on the program, and we appreciate him taking a few moments. I did not realize he was a St. Louis guy until I looked at the Twitter bio. Nice job by Kyle Sixta of booking him, and now we know that we could call him up whenever, and he's just going to say yes, because that is the power of KMOX. We'll take a break, come back, wrap up hour number one of the program. It's the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Just a couple minutes left in hour number one. Hour number two, we've got no guests lined up. So if you, we'll talk some baseball. We'll talk some Cardinals during the hour. So if you want to get in here talking Cardinals, we'll have that opportunity for you in the 7 o'clock hour. A couple things I want to touch on. First off, I discussed this last week a little bit. I think it was on Friday. About how I think the Cardinals can be similar this upcoming season to what they were this past season, and that means being a playoff contending team. That's probably their ceiling if the things that we expect to happen this offseason do end up happening, that they are a playoff contender kind of on the low end. But under the pretense of it being kind of a rebuild year, as opposed to this year where the pretense was that they were a legitimate competitor, does it feel different if that's what they turn into? So I want to get into that. I'll look forward to hearing your comments on that. Also, Bernie Miklas, KMOX's own, had a really interesting YouTube video today. You should be subscribed to his YouTube at The Bernie Show on YouTube. And he talked about Oliver Marmol continuing to be surrounded by people who could potentially take his job. And I'm going to touch on that a little bit coming up in just a while. Speaking of Bernie, a reminder, coming up in a little bit more than an hour, 8 o'clock tonight, we've got another KMOX Sports Roundtable. We record these via video streams on at noon, where myself, Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, and Bernie Miklas are with you. And you can watch them on any of our social media channels, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, whatever. Starting next week, we're going to be doing this every day. So your noon hour, if you want sports talk, you're going to hear from us every day at noon. We'll talk more about that coming up later here on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Gray Bar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We are back at it as we get into hour number two of the program, taking you till 8 o'clock this evening. Again, at 8 o'clock, we've got a KMOX Sports Roundtable rolling your way. Myself, along with Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, and Bernie Miklas. We record these at noon on Mondays, and then we replay it at 8 o'clock. But when we're recording them, it is a live video stream. So if you are looking for something to catch at noon previously on Mondays, you can do that by watching us. Now, the big news that we announced on the show today, starting next Monday, this is going to become a daily endeavor. I think once a week, it is still going to be all four of us together. And the other 4 days, it'll be some combination of myself, Kevin, Bernie, Tom, others who are KMOX sports adjacent. Don't want to commit to any name out there before they've been talked to about it. But yeah, we're going to be doing this every day for about 40 minutes at noon, 12 to 1240, 1245. We went to about 1250 today on it. Got started just a couple minutes late. So make sure you're following along with the KMOX Sports social media channels. And then we've got the replay of this Sports Roundtable coming up. Coming your way this evening at 8 o'clock. I'd like to hear from you a little bit on this next topic of conversation, because I mentioned this last week, and I'll for those of you who weren't listening, because I know you don't listen to every single second of the show, and that's okay. The truncated version of a take that I passed along last week is, even if the Cardinals do not bring back Paul Goldschmidt, Nolan Arenado, Wilson Contreras, Ryan Helsley, I can envision, and this is not me being like some homer or some apologist for the Cardinals. It really isn't. And I can back up everything I say. I see a scenario, not that it's guaranteed, but I see a scenario where the Cardinals actually don't take that big of a step back from last year to this year. Mainly because, what has to happen is to replace the offense of Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado, obviously their offense wasn't that great this year. Goldschmidt had one of the two or three worst OPSs of any qualifying first baseman in baseball. Nolan Arenado just simply was not driving the ball. Home runs, doubles were not what you want him to be. It's a huge if. I'm not saying this is going to happen. I'm saying it could happen. If Jordan Walker takes a step forward, and if Nolan Gorman takes a step forward, you more than make up for the offense that you lost. And the hill that I am more than willing to die on, the one that I think I'm 100% right on, and I'm not worried at being wrong, if Sonny Gray sticks around, not a guarantee, if Sonny Gray sticks around, I think a rotation of Sonny Gray, Eric Fetty, Andre Pallante, and then some combination of Michael McGreevy, Gordon Graceffo, Quinn Matthews can be, if not equal to, at least in the same neighborhood as a rotation of Sonny Gray, Miles Michaelis, Lance Lynn, Kyle Gibson, Steven Matz. And in that potential rotation that I mentioned, I did not mention Miles Michaelis' name, and I did not mention Steven Matz's name. Both those guys are still Cardinals. They might be Cardinals next year. We'll talk about that if that ends up happening, but obviously winds of change are happening. So that's my premise. The idea, now the one area where you take a step back, without a doubt, and I've got no qualms about saying it, if you move on from Ryan Helsley, you are not going to have as good of a ninth inning situation next year. Helsley is one of the two or three best closers walking the face of the earth. You lose him, it's gonna be tough. It's going to be a challenge to get the type of effectiveness as that you had. And the Cardinals winning as many games as they did win this year largely connected to their ability to win close games and their ability to close things out in the ninth with Helsley. So I don't have an answer for that. I've got an answer for the rotation. I've got an answer for the offense. Don't have an answer for the bullpen and the ninth inning specifically. That would be the area that would most concern me when comparing last year's team to next year's team. So here's my question for you. Last year was a failure for the Cardinals in the sense that the expectations that were set was this was a team that was going to be contending. The goal was to get into the playoffs. They were supposed to be a playoff team. When they made the moves last year, bringing in Sonny Gray, bringing in Kyle Gibson, bringing in Lance Lynn, when they did all of that, the idea was that they were going to be a playoff team. And even the moves at the trade deadline, when they got Eric Fetty and when they got Tommy Pham, they did it for a playoff run. They did not make the playoffs. So in that sense, it was a failure. So let's go to this hypothetical situation that I want to throw out. Let's say the Cardinals are kind of the same next year. Different guys, obviously. It's going to be a lot of younger players. But let's say everything that I threw out happens. The rotation, pretty much just as good. Michael McGreevy and Andre Pallante and maybe a Gordon Graceffo or a Quinn Matthews after a little while, they do a nice job. And Sonny Gray is Sonny Gray and Eric Fetty is Eric Fetty. And the overall output of that starting rotation, very equal to last year's. Offensively, they bring some really smart people into the organization this offseason, and they do a great job of working with Jordan Walker and working with Nolan Gorman, and those guys improve significantly. Let's say all that happens, and they're kind of in the same area. They're kind of in the same area. And for those, you know, flirting with the postseason, above 500, they were 83-79 this past year. Going 83-79 and missing the playoffs on a year where the statement is the goal is for the playoffs, that's a failure because they didn't make it to the playoffs. If that exact same kind of season happens, but with younger players taking steps forward in a year where expectations that are being set are that this is a reset year, a reboot year, a transition year, whatever word you want to use, but that this is a year where the Cardinals are resetting player development and they are trying to look to the future more than they are looking to 2025. If they do the same thing, are you as a fan like more willing to be accepting of it? And what I'm about to ask you to do, let's take John Mozeliak out of the equation here. I'm tired. Bluntly, I'm tired of talking about John Mozeliak. I want to sit here and have a Cardinals conversation, and the last thing I want to see is somebody complaining that, no, you're not willing to accept that as long as John Mozeliak is making the decisions. That's not the conversation we're going down here, okay? Just not what I want to do. And it's my show, so I get to make that call. From a raw standpoint, if in a year where the organization is stated they are looking to reset things and they're not tearing it down, but they're also dropping payroll and giving young guys more of an opportunity, are you going to be more accepting of a season very similar to what the Cardinals just had? Is that something that you would get if we're talking 1 year from now? You say, you know what? In a year where they're trying to kind of turn things around and reset for the future, I'm okay with that. I'm all right. Or is it still just more of, you know what, if they're not a playoff team, this is the St. Louis Cardinals. The St. Louis Cardinals don't rebuild. And if they're not a playoff team, if they're not a team that's built to do something in the postseason, you are just not accepting it whatsoever. So I will, I'll take your phone calls. I'll take your text messages and your tweets. 314-436-7900. 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. For those of you who are listening via the Odyssey app, just click the microphone button and leave a voice message, and we might be able to play that back for you as well. So the question is, under the pretense that it is a reboot year, a reset year, a transition year, would you be more willing to accept a win-loss record similar to what the Cardinals had this past season, as opposed to your lack of acceptance of it this past season because the expectations were set in a very, very different spot? We'll continue that conversation in just a moment right here on KMOX. Back at it's a Graybar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. Going to take some phone calls here in this segment. If you want to join us, you can do so calling, texting, tweeting, call or text 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call or text, or you tweet at me at Matt Pauly on air without me going through the entire diatribe. Once again, the question I have for you. Last year, It was a failure for the Cardinals because while, yes, they did improve and, yes, they were above 500, they went into the season and into the trade deadline very overtly saying that the goal was to be a postseason club, and they were not. If they have the same type of season, if they end up with around 83 wins and they're in playoff contention all season long, but going into the season, the expectations are different. And they sell off some players, and there's a bunch of young guys that are playing, and there's a focus on player development. Does the same type of season from a win-loss standpoint from last year to next year, does it look different because expectations are in a different place? Let's grab our first phone caller of the segment. Paul has given us a call. Hey, Paul, you're on Sports Open Line.
Hey, Matt, and I'm super excited about the daily roundtable that you previewed. That's going to be rock solid.
Awesome.
It would be the same type of season, but it would be the glass half full instead of the glass half empty, because I think, you know, we can all admit that we St. Louis fans, myself included, are spoiled because we don't hope, we expect to play October baseball, and it's like a way of life in St. Louis, and that's a very, very cool thing. But we are all, you know, in it for the long haul. The Cardinals' rich history dates back 100 years. We won our first World Series in 1926. There's going to be we survived the 50s and the 70s, some of those decades without any postseason play, but the groundwork, the most exciting thing is, you know, we have to sacrifice by being patient for arguably one more year, 2025, which I am not writing off at all. I'm looking, you know, for the reasons you mentioned with this new hitting coach, you know, who, you know, could make a big difference, and the young talent that at any point in time can come together, and the overhaul of our player development system under somebody like Chaim Bloom, who has been analyzing it for a year, and now he's going to systematically put all the pieces in place, and Mr. DeWitt's going to fund it. He's appropriated the money to make our farm system, you know, one of the best in baseball, and it's going to be good times roll from 2026 on. But 2025 is a unique opportunity to have a gravy year where the Cardinals could surprise the tar out of everybody in baseball and be way better than anyone expected with all these young players that are having their coming out parties. So I am super excited for 25. And the bottom line is we all just have to trust. We got to trust the new brain trust. You know, Mozeliak's done a lot of great things. He's in his lame duck period. It's Chaim Bloom, and we all need to trust and buy in to what the Cardinals are trying to do, and I think we're going to be richly rewarded. And I'll hang up.
All right, Paul. Appreciate the phone call. Lots of good thoughts right there. I agree with Paul, especially in the sense that, look, Chaim Bloom has a track record. He has a track record of building minor league systems that develop high-end major league talent. And we can sit here and talk all we want about the Cardinals need to spend more money on the major league roster. But you know what? They're not going to be in the running for Shohei Ohtani when he's a free agent. This past year. They're not going to be in the running when other high-end superstar-level players, like, they're just not going to play in that sandbox. Now, can they spend money on all-star caliber players because they are going to be able to get more out of their homegrown players? So therefore, instead of spending $10 to $12 million on middle of the rotation or middle of the roster type players like Lance Lynn and Kyle Gibson, you can kind of pool that money together and bring in more high-level players. That has to be the goal. And I think that is a place that they are going to get to. I'm excited about what could be this season, depending on how things do shake out. Let's grab Raisha, who has given us a call. Hey, Raisha, you are on a Sports Open Line.
Hi, good to be with you. Lifetime Cardinal fan here. And I'm excited for the young players coming in. I'm going to agree with Paul on that one. I'd rather cheer for the guys coming up than kind of hold on and hope for Arenado and Goldschmidt on their downfall. I feel like we need some new blood in the system. But the one thing that I think we need to caution of is we can't have a team of just young guys. As you're watching the World Series and the playoffs this year, you know, all of those teams have some really solid veteran players that have that leadership. And, you know, I just would hope that we can find somebody to fill those roles. I think Contreras is a good guy for that role, but I think it's time for Goldschmidt and Arenado to probably head on out and see what new talent we can bring up.
All right, Rachel, sir. Yeah, appreciate the phone call. Honestly, Goldschmidt's gone. He's a free agent. They're not re-signing him. I think Arenado is likely to be traded. I think Contreras is likely to be traded. I'm less as convinced on Sonny Gray that he might get moved. But I could be wrong. All those guys could get moved. You have to be ready if, I've said this before, if there is a team out there that comes up empty during free agency and wants to add a high-end starting pitcher and they're willing to give a lot for Sonny Gray, you got to listen. I think what's more likely to happen is, let's say the scenario that I threw out doesn't happen. Let's say next season turns into more disappointment than anything else, that they're not a playoff contending club, that they're not a team that's above 500. If those things happen, I would say that you might even be able to get more for Gray at the trade deadline when there's desperation, as opposed to what you would get for him potentially this offseason. Josh has given us a call. Hey, Josh, you're on a Gray Bar Sports Open Line.
Hey, I know you just said you don't think Gray is going to get traded, but my scenario kind of works with Gray getting traded along with Arenado and Helsley. I think if we have, you know, Nootbaar, Gorman, Walker, if they all develop kind of how we think they will, maybe Wynn continues to do his thing. Burleson hits maybe 30 this year, and we have a record around the same record that we did last year. I'd say that as a success. I like what the first guy said with, we view it as a glass half full rather than a glass half empty.
Yeah, Josh, I agree 100%. I want to see these young guys do something. Now, I look at first and third as being open and also second, and you got to remember J.J. Weatherholt's in the minor league system. He was a top draft pick, first round draft pick this past year. He's going to be in the big leagues at some point this upcoming season, I think. Not a guarantee. He's got to continue to perform in the minors this year. But he at some point is going to get here, and he's going to be your second baseman. Your long-term double play combination at the big league level is Wynn and Weatherholt. So then, but until he gets there, I think the question marks going into next season, the outfield's kind of set, I think. I guess it depends on what happens in center field. If Ciani gets the opportunity, if Victor Scott is able to take a step forward and run with it. But you know it's going to be Walker and Nootbaar in the corners. So that leaves first, second, and third as kind of the open spots going into next season. And I would give Ivan Herrera a first baseman's mitt. So give him an opportunity to play there. Even if Contreras is gone, I still give him a first baseman's mitt. And on days that Pedro Páez is catching, if the scenario plays out where Contreras is gone, I would think that Páez is the lead catcher and Herrera is probably the backup. I give him first baseman mitt, let him play over there occasionally. He'll DH every once in a while. But between first, second, and third, you're going to use some combination on any given day of Herrera, Burleson, Gorman, Donovan, Sejesi. I would contend that group of players can exceed what you got this year from Goldschmidt, Arenado, and whoever was at second. It was Donovan a lot. I think I mentioned Donovan when I said those names. And he's probably the most important piece. And then when Weatherholt gets here, who of those guys has played the best where they're going to get the opportunity to get the most time at third? And it kind of, you know, Gorman's a natural third baseman. Make sure he's comfortable, and he is comfortable, but look at Gorman at third, look at Donovan at third, and between those two guys. And if Gorman doesn't take that step forward, we got a text message a few moments ago from the 618 that says, I have no faith in either Walker or Gorman. They've shown very little, but Wynn and Ciani are great additions. Look, I understand the feeling on Walker and Gorman because of their production this past year, and it was more alarming for Gorman than Walker because Gorman's been around longer. Walker is still more in a development stage than Gorman is. But let's not sit here and say that these guys can't get back on the right track. I wasn't in St. Louis, but man, do I remember the social media clamoring for Nolan Gorman to get called up to the big leagues when he was killing it at AAA before he ever made his major league debut. I mean, you would have thought that the St. Louis Cardinals were the single dumbest organization in the history of professional sports because they hadn't called up Nolan Gorman yet. That's how extreme the fan clamoring for Nolan Gorman was. And I guarantee you, many of the people who right now hate Nolan Gorman are the exact same people who were clamoring for him to get up when he was at AAA. And I would make the argument that he's the same guy. He's the same guy. You gotta figure him out. You gotta unlock him. You gotta get him more comfortable. Gotta get out of his head a little bit. Can't strike out as much. Has to make more contact, but he's still a 30 home run potential guy. He's still the same guy. Just because he hasn't reached his potential yet. We throw players out, as and when I say fan, we as fans, people who are emotional about the game, and there's nothing wrong with that. But sometimes you're wrong. I'm wrong about stuff all the time. When I say sometimes you're wrong, like I'm not putting you down. If we go back in the archive of this program, I'm sure you can find some stuff that I'm wrong on. It's because we talk about things that are sort of 51-49 scenarios, right? So we're wrong sometimes. I would say that if you're ready to throw out Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman, there's a pretty good chance you're wrong. I would say that these guys are still guys that can go forward. And the same people who want to throw out Jordan Walker and Nolan Gorman are the same people who destroy the Cardinals when somebody leaves the Cardinals and goes somewhere else and excels in a really big way. So instead of throwing out Jordan Walker and throwing out Nolan Gorman and just being done with those guys, how about we say, hey, what can the Cardinals do to help these guys become who we thought they were going to become? And you do that by bringing in smart people. And they did that with Heim Bloom. And they did that with Rob Serfolio. And they're going to do that with a lot more people that you'll never hear of ever. Because the Cardinals are going to get smarter. They got figurehead people who are smart. And smart people are going to hire more smart people. And it's just going to be a trickle-down effect of more smart people. And smart people are going to look at Jordan Walker. They're going to look at Nolan Gorman. And they're going to say, we can do X, Y, Z. And if they will listen to us, there is a good chance that they are going to be better. Now, it's on the player, too. And I think Jordan Walker at times has not listened. He has not listened. I think it's been frustrating for some people in the organization that there are some obvious things that Walker needs to do better. He needs to elevate the ball off the bat. That is a very simple thing. He hits the ball so gosh darn hard, but he doesn't elevate it. Elevate the flipping ball. Elevate it. And all of a sudden, you become an impact middle-of-the-order run producer. And that's what has to happen. Jordan Walker has to be willing to listen to that conversation. Text message from 313-0303. When asking, are you willing to accept a step back year from the Cardinals, but be more positive about it because they're in the middle of a rebuild? Says, no way. The Cardinals don't rebuild. They reload. We're not the Rockies. I'm a fan who's moved from St. Louis to Colorado. Rockies fans are used to losing. That's what they expect. Cardinals fans are not ready for promises. We expect contenders every year. No way. I would say to you, yes, Cardinals fans expect contenders every year. And what they're trying to do right now in getting the player development system up to date is they are trying to create a scenario once again where they can indeed create contenders on an every year basis. We'll keep talking about this, getting some other messages in here. So we'll take a quick break and continue on in just a moment. This is the Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX. Back out on Gray Bar Sports Open Line on KMOX, having a good conversation about the Cardinals and expectations and what you are willing to accept in a year that's kind of a reset, reboot. They're not calling it a rebuild. They're not really calling it anything. I think reset is the word that they've used most often, but that's been more in the way the player development system has been resetting the player development process. Not so much talking about the major league roster, but John Mozeliak, when he spoke to the media last week, did say that The expectation is that there's going to be many, many opportunities for younger players this upcoming season. Continuing to take your thoughts on all of this, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air. We'll go back to the phones. James has given us a call. Hey, James, you are on a Graybar Sports Open Line.
Hey, Matt, how are you today?
Doing all right.
Hey, I just had a question for you. My son plays a lot of baseball, and he's really excited about a whole bunch of other players, but unfortunately, I don't hear him talking about many other St. Louis players like we experienced with Ozzie Smith and Willie McGee. So I was just wondering about your take on this stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting because I'm 42 years old. And I grew up loving Ozzie Smith. I grew up knowing those, you know, that era of players. And then I really fell in love with the game of baseball in the mid-90s as I was going from, you know, middle school into high school. I always talk about the 96 Cardinals team as being the team that I really fell in love with. And I can give you that lineup if you really want me to right now. But that's neither here nor there. Look, the Cardinals have two potential Hall of Famers on the roster this past year, and Paul Goldschmidt and Nolan Arenado. But you know what those guys don't have as Cardinals? They don't have major postseason success. So the excitement about these superstar caliber players, there's not like these big moments in the postseason that go along with them. Now, people can think to Albert Pujols and Yadier Molina and Adam Wainwright. It's very recent that the Cardinals do have those type of players that I think get young people excited. The guy right now, I'm seeing it all the time. I am seeing it all the time when I'm around kids, when I see kids. You know, I'll sit at Busch Stadium where we have our little broadcast booth where I do the pre and post game show. It's right down in the bottom, basically like behind the green seats. So when people are being brought on, whether it's to do parades or be honored on the field or whatever, they walk by my window. You know who I'm seeing kids get real excited about right now? It's Mason Wynn. It's easily Mason Wynn. Plays a position in shortstop that's a high-end, flashy position. Plays the game in a really fun way. Like, man, this man does some things that are pretty special. And he's got kind of an aura about him. I mean, that's part of why I don't want to turn this into a Mason Wynn versus Jordan Walker thing. I'm really not. But I think in many ways you can compare the two personalities. Mason Wynn's personality is if there's a challenge in front of him, he's going to say blanket. Not like something you put on yourself when you are sleeping, but blank it. And he's going to run through that wall, whatever stupid cliche you want to use. Where I think Walker's got a more reflective, take a step back. Hey, I've been doing this way and it's worked for me. I need a really good reason on why I should change. And if it's not a good reason, I'm going to keep doing things my way. Like, I think the personalities are very different. When charging, going forward, nothing's going to get in his way. Walker, take a step back, assess the situation. Maybe I'll do this, maybe I'll do that. I think the personalities are different. And I think the personalities, in a way, impact who they have become as players. Now, I know that wasn't the question that was asked. It was about, you know, kids, next generation of baseball fans, getting excited about a next generation of Cardinal. I think there are players on the way who are going to kind of fit into that conversation. You know, Tink Hentz, dude's electric, right? And I was actually thinking about this. Kyle Sixta is our sports producer. Let me throw this at you. I almost don't want to say this on the air because I may be so wrong that I don't want there to be a record of me being so wrong. If the Cardinals trade Ryan Helsley, should Tink Hentz be given an opportunity in spring training to compete to be the team's closer next year?
It's interesting because he definitely has the stuff to be a late inning bullpen guy, like just a dominating fastball, great secondary stuff. And he's never thrown a bunch of innings, like I know we've talked about before.
Never gotten over 100 innings.
He has the makings for someone who's nasty at the end of your bullpen.
Yeah.
It's worth a look. I would definitely agree with that.
Okay. Because, I mean, here's a dude that hasn't been able to stay healthy every year, hasn't thrown a lot of innings, hasn't gotten past double A. Like, there's a lot of reasons of me saying that I'm wrong.
Yeah.
But the dude's stuff is so good. And if you're going to give opportunities to young guys and you're going to move on from Ryan Helsley, why not? And if it fails spectacularly, so be it. He can go to AAA and he can do his thing and he can reset. And that's the opposite of what I say. Like, I made the argument that it was terrible that Victor Scott was on the big league roster, and I think he regressed as a result of him being on the big league roster. So I'm talking out both sides of my mouth right now. I'm well aware of it, and I don't even like it because I like being consistent in what I talk about. But I let's see what you got.
Yeah, I agreed. Long term, though, I definitely want to give Tink Hentz a shot at being a starter. Like, he deserves that, you know. Obviously, the stuff is great, and if he turns out to be awesome out of the bullpen, then we can roll with that. Yeah. But I think at some point, it's at least worth a shot, you know.
Yeah, and see what he does in spring. He's going to be in Major League spring training. He has stalled out a little bit. But yeah, so that was the young. I think Tink Hentz is another guy that when he gets here, young fans are going to enjoy. Thomas Sejacy. Okay, so I was on a Cardinals caravan with Thomas Sejacy. I can tell you, just him talking and like his look and his aura, he's got kind of this cool guy thing going on. There were younger people I'm gonna use the word attracted because I can't think of a better word, but it wasn't like, oh, this guy looks good. It's just younger people, as they were watching and talking with him, they seemed to be drawn's the better word, drawn to him. That's the word that I want to use. But the bottom line in all of this is they got to perform. Mason Wynn performed. If Mason Wynn was a terrible shortstop, the young fans that I talk about loving him, they wouldn't love him so much, but he performed in a really big way. And he's probably going to win a gold glove because it's pretty spectacular what he's doing. And shortstop, going back to Ozzie Smith, that's a position that if you really want to fall in love with a guy and really enjoy as a kid watching from afar, shortstop's the position to do it. All right, one more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up this edition of the program. It's Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on King of OX.
Back at it as we've got just a couple minutes left in the program, but just because we are done doesn't mean the sports talk ends, and it also doesn't mean that you are completely rid of me, although you'll have me plus, which is better, because you're going to get Kevin Wheeler, and you're going to get Tom Ackerman, and you're going to get Bernie Miklas. They are going to join me for a KMOX Sports Roundtable. We recorded it today at noon, and we've been doing that every Monday here recently. And we were given permission by the bosses today to officially announce that the show is moving from a one-day-a-week roundtable to a five-day-a-week show. So starting this Monday, November 4th, baseball season will be over. First day of the college basketball season. SLU basketball, by the way, that day is going to play right here on KMOX as we are the home of the Billikens. But starting this Monday, every day at 12 noon, we will have our video stream show 1 day a week, probably Mondays. That's not for sure yet. 1 day a week. It's going to be all four of us with Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, Tom Ackerman, and myself. And then the other 4 days a week, it's going to be some combination of two or three of us going through things. So start to make that part of your lunch routine. You can watch it live. Of course, it's always going to be available archive on the KMOX Sports social media channels, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, wherever you happen to go. You can find it right there. And yeah, that's what we've got starting next Monday. That's going to be an every day sort of thing. But tonight in about 10 minutes or so, just after the 8 o'clock news, we are going to have our roundtable from earlier today. Hopefully you're going to be able to enjoy it. Here's how committed Tom Ackerman is to this. Tom had like a medical appointment today. I'm probably breaking HIPAA violations by telling you this. And he rushed out of his doctor's appointment. I think it was just like a yearly physical, by the way. I don't know for sure. Here I am sharing Tom's medical information. Sorry, Tom. Hopefully I have a job tomorrow. And he rushed out of his doctor's appointment and got into his car and joined the video stream right there. So if you see video of it, you see Tom in his car. But yeah, that is how committed Tom Ackerman is to these programs that we are going to be doing. So that is on the way next. Thanks for being tuned in. I'll talk to you again tomorrow for another Sports Open Line here on KMOX.